You are listening to Visionaries Wrestling Network, providing your perfect podcast experience.
Good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good.
First, I need to avoid legal snags by allowing you to know that you are, in fact, being recorded.
There we go. I think
that's what Skype just told me to do.
All right, as far as I can tell, this is episode 60 of Good Cop, Bad Cop. And this is going to be a little different. Matt's away doing gaming, so I was trying to bring in somebody who could probably fill that role. So who do I know who knows about gaming, knows about wrestling? So I went, of course, to the number one podcast in the world. I went to Blade Job.
I'm here. I am live, even though my on-air sign is not on.
Oh, that's fine. My on-air sign is on. I wrote it on my notes ahead of time so we could be as proper as possible. Now, you asked off-air, how is this going to work? I have no idea how this is going to work. All I know is I don't like talking about WWE every week, and we don't talk about it quite as much now. There's certainly a lot of wrestling out there, and I know one of the organizations I love to watch is Beyond Wrestling, Uncharted Territory. I know you talk about it a lot on the Blade Job show anyway. I just wanted to kind of pick your brains a little bit. I kind of wanted to play Mason's role, actually, on this. I kind of wanted to talk about, do like a mini review. And then I wanted you to throw in kind of like stories. Now, we did this kind of a few weeks ago. I needed your advice on Matt Tremont. And I was like, oh, I know you've talked about him before. And it worked perfectly. We didn't have any ideas. There was no plans. There was no notes. We just talked for about 10 minutes on Matt Tremont. I added it to the end of the episode. I thought it worked brilliantly. And I thought we'd kind of do a similar thing to this. We'd talk about some of the matches. If you got comments to throw in, we can throw in. If we're not, we can move on. And it was the perfect time to do this because season two just started. So we've had at the time of recording, we've had two episodes. And I believe by the time this drops, I think the third one will have actually come out. What makes this also interesting is, I don't think you actually watched any of these matches yet, have you?
No, I have not. I'm very far behind. I actually had someone pull over the other day while I was sitting at work and open their window and ask me if I was going to the show, and I was very confused until I realized I was wearing a Beyond Wrestling hoodie.
Uh-huh.
And I said no, and they said, well, you're going to regret it, and they drove away. So I don't know what I'm regretting because I didn't see it, but my time to wrestling ratio has been off lately, and I've been trying. I try because usually what I would do is I would watch Beyond, and I would watch, you know, old stuff on the network, or I would watch some indie stuff on YouTube or IWTV. But what I kind of started doing over the past couple of weeks is I was trying to give WWE a shot again, a real shot, like watching live, actually paying attention instead of just playing on my phone. And so I kind of, you know, on Monday nights I was actually watching Raw, and on Friday nights actually watching SmackDown. And I was trying to kind of catch up because this was supposed to be a new beginning for WWE. And there's a lot of great things and a lot of really bad things. But yeah, so Beyond kind of got shuffled to the side for the time being.
I'm sure that this is a big problem for a lot of podcasts right now. There's so much material out there, trying to find the time to do it. And I got to commend you for actually putting in the time. I don't remember the last time I watched Raw live, mainly because I don't have cable anymore. I do have Hulu, which I guess I could watch, but I don't even have the patience to sit for an hour and a half. And if I did, I'm definitely playing on my phone. I've been watching the 20-minute highlights on YouTube, 30-minute highlights on YouTube. But you can't do that with Uncharted Territory. You actually have to watch the whole thing. So there's no fast-forward buttons or anything like that. I guess you can skip between the matches when there's like the 2 minutes of downtime and the commentators are talking, but that's pretty much it. Now, I'm going to be very open about this. I say that I watch Uncharted Territory Season 1. I watched every episode, but I didn't watch every episode in its entirety. What I tend to do is, if I find a wrestler that I like, I will go and see their match. Mainly, it was the people who used to be, I guess, probably at Nova Pro. I guess it was my Nova Pro substitute. Like, if I saw Solo Darling or somebody like that, I'd be like, oh, or Alley Cat was there. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go and watch those matches. And I tend to avoid the people I didn't know, which probably for my long-term development wasn't a good plan. So there's definitely going to be some matches on here where it was like, yeah, I have no idea who this person is. Of course, that's perfect, because I got my expert with me today, so you can actually guide me through a little bit and give me perhaps a little bit of insight. And perhaps for other people that don't know these characters either, you can tell us a little bit more.
That's what I'm good at. I like to think, explaining things in a way that, what's the word I want to say? It shows respect for them, which is I am going to step on my soapbox a couple times during this, which is something that's severely lacking in the professional wrestling podcasting community lately. I can show respect for these performers without using them to further any sort of agenda. I love professional wrestling. I've been a professional wrestling fan since I was 5 years old. I mean, we're talking, you know, 28, 29 years mm-hmm. that I've been watching this, and this is a whole new world, and what Beyond Wrestling is doing with Uncharted Territory is something I never thought I would see. So, you know, I'm happy to be here and happy to give my insight.
It sounds like from that statement that you're probably the designated good cop then. You're going to be given the positive side of this. Whereas I'm probably going to be more your normal role on Blade Job Show, where I'm just going to be going, oh, I saw this. Like, what the heck were they doing? Or anyway, but we'll see how it plays out.
I can't talk too much negative because I didn't actually watch the matches themselves, but I'm looking at the names of a lot of the performers, and there's definitely some good cop and some bad cop in there. But, you know, we'll see how things go.
Good! Bad!
Alright, let's kick off then. This was season 2, episode 1. Well, there's a bad cop moment straight away. I just realized on my notes I put this was season 1. Alright, match 1, Lance Archer versus Josh Briggs. Now, I noticed right at the start for this match, Anthony Green's at his table. Now, if he's at his table, to me, that means he's selling merch. Now, I'm going to go straight away. I think that's a pretty bad cop moment. Now, I actually used to get upset with this, because I'm like, hey, I want to see you at your table, because I want to buy something. And then somebody said, that's really disrespectful to the wrestlers. Like, if you're buying merch from them, they're not actually concentrating on the match. Now, he could just have been stood there socializing. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Okay, so at the end of the day, these guys are getting paid peanuts. They are getting paid absolutely, in the grand scheme of things, nothing to be there.
Sure.
You know, they might be getting $30 to show up and almost die. And I see that Mr. Green was in a match later on.
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm on episode 2. Sorry, never mind. So I'm assuming he was on. At the end of the day, you know, especially because during intermissions, during, you know, downtime, there's a lot of people wandering around.
Sure.
And there's a lot of people, you know, you don't really get a chance or an opportunity to go up to a merch table, just walk right up and say, hey, how's it going? Buy some merch. I feel that from the moment that these guys walk in the door to the moment they leave, I see no issue with them selling merch, whether there's a match happening or not, because your interaction with them is probably going to last 2 to 3 minutes, tops.
Tops.
Yeah, you should be paying attention to the match. You should be watching the match, and it might be construed as disrespectful, but you know, if you can give this guy $20, $30, this guy's going to eat lunch that day.
Sure. That makes sense.
And the White Eagle is where they hold Beyond Wrestling now, is a little weird because they do have merch tables upstairs in the venue. They also traditionally have some downstairs as well, just, you know, based on room.
Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming there's not a lot of guys downstairs during the show. But the people who have merch tables set up within, there's no difference between going over to Anthony Green and saying, hey, I'd like to buy a t-shirt, or going to the bar and saying, hey, I'd like a drink.
I gotcha.
You know,
I gotcha.
I mean, but in this way, you're helping someone who you admire and you care about. And, you know, in a weird way, you want to see them succeed. So, you know, I guess I'm saying good cop.
That's fine. I just realized, I didn't think about this at the time. I don't think there was an intermission when I was watching this. So I don't know what the general setup is for Uncharted Territory. I guess they either have to sell their merch beforehand or afterwards, but there's not that 15-minute gap that you normally have, or 20 minutes, so I guess you got to sell it when you can. So perhaps with hindsight, I'll cut him some slack.
When they were at Electric Haze, there was no intermission. You had time before the show, and you had time after the show, and there were very, very few people available, just because there was no room.
Yeah.
But you usually had 3 or 4 people at the ring, and you had someone over at the Beyond Wrestling merch table you know, peddling their wares. Usually a bigger name, like SCU, when they were there on episode 1, I think, or 2 of season 1, they were the ones who were at the Beyond Wrestling merch table selling SCU t-shirts and taking photos with fans and all that, but there was no one else over there. It was just them and Beyond Wrestling merchandise. Like, that was it.
Okay.
So, I mean, White Eagle has a little more space, and if they're still pulling the same types of crowds that they were pulling at Electric Haze, it means people are going to be spread out a little more, which is going to make it better. I don't know. It's a weird setup because they are under much different time constraints than when they were running monthly shows where it was essentially a pay-per-view. It was, you know, here's an hour and a half of wrestling, here's a 30-minute intermission, here's an hour and a half of wrestling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little different, and, you know, it's obviously a new experiment for them, too. Nobody has ever really done something like this. I think they're doing their best. I think they're doing they're doing pretty good. And I just want to point out, I want to go off topic for literally 5 seconds. My other monitor is the monitor I use when I'm streaming over on mixer.com/nishguy. And for some reason, my Xbox is advertising a cricket game. And you might be the only person I know, other than maybe Matt and Mr. Kirkby, who knows what the frick cricket is.
I stopped watching cricket for a long time. This year is the year I actually got back. So who's playing, just out of interest? Does it say what the matches they're trying to get you to watch?
No, it's a cricket video game.
Oh, a video game. Oh, goodness. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm certainly not interested in that.
It's right next to the Alien game and a game called Astroneer. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that, but I just thought I'd bring it up because it happened to catch my eye.
Man, I think the voices are listening then. They've heard people talking about cricket and then suddenly you got that advertisement. Yeah, that's a little bit suspect to me. Now, one good cop moment for this match. I did notice people were drinking beers, and I've seen that before. That's nothing unique about that at Beyond Wrestling. I did think, though, in the summer, I went to SummerSlam in Toronto. They even pour water into a cup for you. If you buy a bottle of water, they won't even give you a bottle of water. They will pour the water into a cup for you, and then you take that. The fact that Beyond is progressive enough to let you actually have an actual beer in a civilized vessel, I think is fantastic. I really like the look of that.
And I agree with that. I think the issue is a lot of major arenas, you know, whether you're talking like the Staples Center or the Garden here in Boston, you know, they have a lot of issues with when you've got 15,000 people, there's a much bigger chance there's going to be some jerk who's going to throw their bottle at someone.
Sure.
And I know that a lot of these arenas, too, they're hockey arenas, and they will take your caps away from you. They'll still sell you a bottle of water,
yes,
but they will take your cap away because if you throw that cap on the ice, you can't see it, and someone skates hits that, and someone's going to get hurt.
Fair enough.
I guess, you know, the White Eagle, I mean, it's a Polish knights club kind of thing. I mean, it's definitely, I think, a different situation. But, yeah, no, it is nice to especially when the performers, when the wrestlers will come to the ring and drink a beer, a la, you know, may he always be a member of the Beyond Wrestling roster, Joey Janela. You know, seeing them come with a bottle of beer to the ring as opposed to a cup of beer always kind of led a little more credence to what they were doing anyways.
Sure. I can't argue with that. Now, I've got a confession for this one. I've heard the name Lance Archer. I did not know who Lance Archer was. I did hear on commentary that he's from New Japan. That's not the image I get when I think... If you mention a New Japan wrestler, I am not thinking of somebody as hard-hitting as what he was. Yeah. Obviously, in a match against Josh Briggs.
I'm gonna bad cop you right now.
And I don't have a good pedigree on New Japan,
so... I'm the good cop. So, obviously, the strong style in Japan, I think, fits perfectly with Lance Archer as a performer. You know, he is very hard-hitting. Now, interesting enough, I saw Lance Archer 2 weeks ago at New Japan Pro Wrestling in Lowell with Fighting Spirit Unleashed. And so that was actually interesting that I was like, wow, I'm seeing this guy wrestle for New Japan, and he's going to be wrestling in Worcester in a week and a half. So I thought that was really kind of neat. And it was my first time seeing Lance Archer live. The guy is a monster, a legitimate monster. Like, this is a guy who, if he was in WWE or AEW, would be going up against Braun Strowman or, I don't know, does AEW have any big wrestlers at this point?
Still not familiar enough with their roster, I got to admit.
I'm trying to think of anyone who's, like, big, because they don't really seem like they focused on the big men. They focused more on the smaller indie guys, like flippy guys, I believe is the proper terminology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can't think of anyone who fits.
Lance Archer is a frightening human being. I've never talked to him personally, so I don't really know if he's truly a frightening human being, but in the ring, most certainly, a frightening human being.
I did say on this one, I said, I can do like the reviews and the matches. And then you said, well, I got a list of all the results for them. And I was like, oh, I think I got that. Yeah, first of all, I have no idea who won this match. I didn't even bother to write that down. I don't think that was the... At the end, if you ask me about a year's time about this match, I'm not going to remember who won. I am going to remember it was hard-hitting, though. And it was... I was enjoying watching them slug each other out the whole time. Let's move straight on to match two. Let's go with Solo Darling versus Matt Sterling. Now, I've got some mathematician bad cop moments for this. I'm not sure what Matt Sterling's exact weight, but the commentator said something like 210.33333333. He said quite a few threes. That's not very accurate. There's no way you can weigh him to eight decimal places. I think what they were trying to say is a third of a pound, but that's not the 0.33. That's obviously a very specific one for me as a mathematician, but it ruined the start of this match for me. To be fair,
they have some really fancy scales now that can actually tell you your body mass. They can tell you your average body fat.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure they have scales that can tell you your 10 decimal point what your weight is.
They probably can, but do you need to know that as a wrestling fan? And I would say no. I would say to the nearest pound would have been perfectly sufficient for your weight. There's obviously going to be fluctuations in sweat and a whole host of things, such that the eighth degree of accuracy is totally irrelevant.
I'm definitely agreeing with you. However, this may be definitely a situation of, like, Orange Cassidy, whose weight doesn't matter.
See, that's better.
It definitely could be part of his gimmick. I don't know. I don't know enough about him, to be fair.
And I don't know Matt Sterling.
Solar Darling is taller than a stack of pancakes.
Correct. And there's something about a pint of ice cream as well, but I'm struggling to remember what the exact introduction is for her right now. Officer Magnum came out, so obviously we got the chance of he's a good boy. We had some very interesting comments from commentary, and I don't think I had Mason with me, which was definitely a good cop moment. I think he was being... I'm not sure the two commentators' names. One was being very disrespectful to Solo Darling. And the guy asked the person who was being rude, have you ever been on a date with a woman? And he replies, date? When you pay $300, you don't go on a date. Now, for me, I thought that was a pretty funny line, but I was very glad I didn't have anybody around with me who I needed to explain that reference to. And the match ended pretty quickly.
Knowing beyond, they probably had a wrestler in commentary, because they usually have... Mr. Crockett, and then someone like, you know, David Starr, Joey Janela, or whoever on commentary with them, or Josh Briggs. He did a lot of commentary when he was out on injury. And I'm wondering who that was, and once again, if that plays into their gimmick of being a misogynistic asshole.
Of course.
I'm sorry, I just realized maybe I shouldn't be saying asshole on your show.
Oh, I think you can say that. You're not on MGB right now. I think we can get away with that one. I think that one's perfectly okay. I'm going to be trying to avoid F-bombs or anything like that, but I think we can get away with that one.
I caught myself earlier. I believe I said friggin', and I really had to think about it before I did.
If you can survive a whole hour with a 10-year-old as he was at that time, and I know you said it was one of the hardest things you ever had to do, then I'm sure you can get through this episode just fine as well. Now, this one finished pretty quickly, mainly because there was a disqualification. Alex Reynolds came in. I don't know Alex Reynolds either, I have to say. Kicked Solo in the face, and then he tried to steal Officer Magnum. They tried to run off with him. Thankfully, Willow Nightingale is back from injury. I know those two were tagged together. I can't remember the tag team name. Something like Beauty and the Bee, something like that. She rescued Officer Darling, and then it quickly turned into a Lucha tag match. And at that point, Jay actually came home. So I'm not sure what time I was watching this, but Jackson came down, and he wanted to watch with me. And I was like, I think this will be okay. Anyway, Solo Darling's in the ring. So I asked him, I said, who is that? And he's like, I know who that is. Officer Magnum. Now, I don't think he was calling Solo Darling a dog, but he certainly made the connection between the two people, so I was kind of proud of him that he knew that. And the Lucha tag match actually finished with Officer Magnum getting the pin, and I was like, I'm so glad I let Jackson stay for that. He thought that was hilarious. The guys were knocked down on the floor, and yeah, the dog was put on top. One, two, three.
So, last year, or earlier this year, I was involved in a, for fun, fantasy wrestling draft.
Okay.
Where a group of us drafted wrestlers on Twitter to create the ultimate rosters. And at one point, I drafted Officer Magnum. And I got pushback saying, well, Officer Magnum's not a wrestler. There's no, he has no win-loss ratio. In which case, I pulled up his, I think, cagematch.net profile to show that he had pinfall victories over people, and I'm glad that he's getting another victory under his collar, because the best wrestler on the planet, in my opinion.
He won a championship. I meant to watch it. I saw it come up on my Twitter feed, and I knew it was going to be released like a week later on IWTV. And I was watching. I had the option to watch it live, and I didn't because I was busy. And yeah, I need to go back and find out what that was. I'm sure for the month of August, when IWTV put their list out, he was number 10 on the rankings. Whether he'll get his shot at the IWTV title remains to be seen, but yeah, he was mentioned as number 10 on that list, so obviously he's having some matches. He's obviously got a bit of a buzz generated right now.
He also follows me on Twitter.
No!
I am in fact followed by Officer Magnum on Twitter. Solo doesn't follow me, but Officer Magnum does.
Oh, I got a 5-year-old who is going to be very jealous of you then. Because I know he follows Officer Magnum, but I'm pretty sure he's not followed back by Officer Magnum.
I'm a big Officer Magnum fan, and I still have never had the opportunity to sit down and ask him the hard-hitting question of, what kind of dog are you? Because there's definitely some corgi in there, but the rest looks almost like a lab, and I'm not quite sure. I might have to field that question to Solo Darling herself, because I'm not sure Officer Magnum can articulate the answer that I need.
I still feel really embarrassed at Nova Pro. I think it must have been the end of last year. And we saw that Officer Magnum was doing autographs. And I rushed back to get Mason. I was like, hey, Officer Magnum's doing autographs. And we went over there. We bought an autograph. And yeah, we kind of left. And then afterwards, I was like, we didn't even talk to Solo at all. We didn't get an autograph from Solo. We didn't get a picture. We were so enamored with Officer Magnum. Anyway, we managed to rectify this. I think it was February this year. But it was kind of humiliating. Like, yeah, we already have your dog's autograph, but can we get your autograph, please, as well?
You know what? I bet she gets it all the time.
Bro.
There's nothing against Solo, darling. She's wonderful. And I appreciate everything that she is. But, I mean, come on. Officer Magnum.
It was a wrestling dog. He was doing autographs. I'm like, how can I not want that autograph? That was like a really unique one for the collection.
Good. Bad.
All right, match three. I don't know this match. I didn't write much down for this one. I've got Jay Freddy, which is a name I've never heard. And I've got Low Blow, and I put quick match. I'm going to guess it was a low blow, and then there was a pin.
Jay Freddy is wonderful, for one thing. Also, one of my wonderful followers on Twitter. I appreciate Jay Freddy. He primarily is in a tag team with the amazing Rory Gulak. And he primarily is famous in... I'm trying to think. It's a promotion in Japan. He does a lot of Japanese stuff. And I'm blanking on the promotion's name for some reason. But yeah, Jay Freddy's I believe he's from New York, but he's a Beyond Wrestling mainstay. He's been around for ages. I love Jay Freddy. Jay Freddy's probably one of my top 10 Beyond people that I've ever seen.
Ah, now I definitely respect your opinion on that. There's certainly names that are going to come up later in this show who I've known probably first from you, and yes, I've gone and watched them later, and I can see the connection. One person who you definitely mentioned to me, who's actually not on this card, so I can mention her, is Skylar. That was a name that I kind of wasn't familiar with. She was supposed to come down to Nova Pro like 3 times and didn't. I've seen her since on the Independent Wrestling TV, and she's obviously great. And there's other names as well, so I certainly respect your opinion on that. So I'm going to pay, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on here. When I see names like Jay Freddy, if I don't know who they are, I'm probably not going to watch their matches. But now I have a little bit of insight, and you're telling me that that's probably one of the people I need to go look at. I will definitely make more of an effort to do that.
Yeah, go back and watch some of his tag matches with Rory Gulak. He also tagged with John Silver quite a few times. They were the Meat Boys, and they are fantastic as well. Obviously, I'm a big John Silver fan as well. No, good wrestler. Always one of those guys I enjoyed because he was a small guy, but he never let his size or stature. I mean, you see him go up against guys as big as Josh Briggs and, you know, put on fantastic matches.
Mm-hmm. And that was actually a name that I wasn't familiar with either until Season 2, Episode 2. And actually, I saw him again yesterday in a CZW match while I was actually researching something for MGB Wrestling Podcast. I was like, oh, I recognize that name now. So, yeah, there's another name that's certainly on my radar now.
CZW World Champion.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, that was actually, I believe, the event that I watched. I watched one of the earlier rounds in the tournament, but I did go back on Cage Match just to see the rest of the tournament quickly, and I saw that, yes, he became the champion for that one. All right, match 4 was Red Death Daniel Garcia. It was supposed to be against, I think it's Matt Mikowski, and then for reasons I couldn't figure out, and I don't know what was going on, it looked like Tony Steppen came in instead. I think it's Tony. I just wrote Steppen down.
So this is the Discovery Gauntlet.
There we go. That's the one. Yes.
Okay, because I know that that What's-His-Face won the series finale, or the season finale last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is weird. All I'm seeing is like TV, like hearing season. Speaking of which, tonight is episode 2 of Batwoman and Supergirl on the CW, so go check that out. That was weird, I know.
I wasn't expecting that at all. That was a segue I wasn't prepared for. All right, let me tell you what I have for this match. There was a kick out from... Oh, this was my bad cop moment. I've seen too much wrestling recently, and this was one of my major criticisms of the first AEW Dynamite event that I took Mason to. Too many unbelievable kickouts from finishers. There was a superplex followed up by a coup de grace and managed to kick out. I didn't write down who kicked out from it, but to me it was like, no, this is not good. Now, also at this point, I was supposed to be watching, and we talked about how much wrestling was actually on. I was filling time before the Chikara Trios match started. So I was, as match was going on, it looked like the match had finished, and I was like, perfect, because I was thinking this will be a 10-minute match, and that's how long it was before the trio started. And then this match went on and on, and yeah, I didn't write anything else down because I'm like, come on, hurry up and finish. I got to watch the end of this match, but I also want to switch across to the Chikara's thing. So yeah, I guess this is your opportunity then. Any stories about Red Death Daniel Garcia or Tony Steppen?
No.
All right.
So, first and foremost, the biggest issue, and I don't say it's not really an issue, it's just kind of how it goes, is with this Discovery Gauntlet, there's a lot of people that I am not familiar with.
Okay.
Now, I saw Garcia wrestle last season, and I enjoyed him, but I really have not managed to see anything else he's done. You know, the Discovery Gauntlet definitely has its success stories, obviously the biggest one being Thomas Santel, mm-hmm. becoming one of the most over people in Beyond Wrestling history, based on a gimmick, based on a movie from 1985, and that's brilliant. But I don't see that happening with Garcia.
Okay.
He doesn't connect to the crowd the way that Thomas Santel did, or Brad Hollister, who's not really, he wasn't really unknown. He was just kind of, you know, he's a newer performer on the scene. But Brad Hollister obviously is getting over with the Beyond Wrestling crowd as well. But I don't see a lot of people reaching the level that Thomas Santel has done. Granted, Thomas Santel was in WWE at one time.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I didn't know who he was. And the funny enough about that is Thomas Santel's time in WWE was super short-lived. He was only in WWE for like 6 months on TV. But I actually saw him live at Backlash in 2005. I went to Backlash, but, you know, when I looked him up, I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. He was in WWE. And then I looked up when he wrestled and I said, oh, I was at that pay-per-view. And then I kind of like the wheels started turning and I said, oh, yeah, I remember that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But like someone like Garcia, I have no connection to him. He seems to be doing okay, and the crowd seems to be behind him, but I don't see him getting over like some of the other names might.
Fair enough. Now, I actually thought the reverse, actually. I actually did know Tony Steppen. I'd heard people talk about him. I actually thought I'd heard people say how good he was as well. And I had seen a couple of his matches. I think one of them was at, I want to say, Pizza Party Wrestling in New Jersey. That was an organization I'd heard about. So I remember watching part of their card. So I was kind of surprised he was on that. Because I would say, I don't know every... I know the indies sort of in the area that I live, but I don't necessarily know them outside of that area. So that was one that kind of surprised me.
Good!
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Good. Bad.
Now, I'm going to link straight into match five then, because I know you don't know the card for this. It actually was Thomas Santel versus Orange Cassidy. Now, I hadn't seen Thomas Santel, so I'm going to guess I'd probably skip through those gauntlet matches. So the match started off with actually giving presents to Orange Cassidy. So it started, and then, of course, he gives him a present. He looks and see what it is. And then we get the chant of one more gift, which I always love the chants that the crowds come up with, things like that. And he actually bought some Ovaltine for Orange Cassidy. Now, obviously, Orange Cassidy's known for drinking his orange juice. So I wasn't familiar with the Ovaltine. I didn't even realize that was a drink in here. I actually thought that was an English drink, so I was kind of surprised by that. During the match, Thomas Santel loses his glasses, so Orange Cassidy gives him his sunglasses. So there was kind of a switch there as well between the different personalities. You got the classic Orange Cassidy things. He gets a single leg crab on Thomas Santel with his hands in his pocket. It's fantastic. I love watching Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy is my favorite wrestler to watch. I love the fact that IWTV now, you can search by wrestler. So you can go and look and you can find matches from him. I normally just click on anything that they update is Orange Cassidy on there. And then I'll go and watch those matches. And then towards the end...
I want to point something out real quick. The fact that Orange Cassidy sitting in the crowd at Dynamite this past week got a bigger ovation than almost everyone else.
Uh-huh.
Just him sitting there was one of the biggest pops of the evening. Like, this guy is over, and I'm still, I don't mean to get off topic, but it still worries me that the Orange Cassidy character has a shelf life. It works on the indies. How is it going to work on television? And I think that we will see a transition to a more athletic Orange Cassidy within 6 months.
I'm sure that would have to happen as well. I still think right now it's perfect putting him on tag teams so you don't overexpose it and then you burn it out too quickly. So I'm kind of happy with what they're doing right now, or putting him as somebody who comes down to ringside but doesn't necessarily wrestle immediately. So I'm happy that they're still doing that. Now, actually, this kind of links in, though, as well, because I actually thought he was done. I assume that's why he dropped the IWTV title. And as we get towards the end of the match, Thomas Santel tries to, also gets in a single leg crab, tries to lock in the STF, can't because his hands are in his pockets. And that can only happen to Orange Cassidy. Brilliant. He forces Orange Cassidy to put his hands in his own pockets, though. I was like, whoa, that's original. Like, halfway through the match, he took his hands out, and of course he's fighting as a normal wrestler would do. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic, actually. I hadn't seen that. Somebody forcing him to put his hands into his pockets. Kind of playing into his own tactic a little bit. Then we had the switch. Thomas Santel tries the orange juice. Freshly Squeezed tries the Ovaltine. And he wins after spitting it in his face and a Superman punch. Now, Orange Cassidy came out and he cut a promo, and there was "please don't go" chants, obviously, from the crowd, because we assume he's going to be AEW. And he starts by saying, "Hello, I'm Orange Cassidy, and I'm not going anywhere." And he made it very clear that he wanted his title belt back from Warhorse. So I was kind of excited by that. That match, as we're talking, was actually played out yesterday in Asbury Park. I nearly drove out the 4 hours. It was very tempting. I woke up about 5 o'clock in the morning. I was very tempted to wake Mason up and say, "Hey, you want to drive up and see there? I have no idea on the result. result. I don't think I saw on Twitter. I saw Warhorse post a few things, so I think possibly Warhorse did win. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with him. I assumed he was only going to be wrestling for AEW.
I am under the assumption. So AEW is in a weird situation right now. I do not agree with, if you have a full-time performer and you're paying them X amount of dollars and all this, that, and the other thing, I actually agree with the WWE model. They should not be able to work anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an investment.
Yeah.
And anyone who doesn't understand that doesn't understand that, you know, if you were going to pay your, you know, mechanic $100 or $1,000 and he was going to go fix someone else's car with the parts that you bought for your car, you'd be pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way I look at it. And maybe that's a bad example, but, you know, it's just like, so I'm looking at it like most likely it's I am signing with AEW. However, I still have dates booked out until January, February 2020. So I will sign, but I'm going to work all of these dates.
That makes sense.
That's how I look at it. Because, I mean, he's a mainstay in a lot of promotions right now.
Sure.
I'm sure he was booked out really, really far when he signed with AEW. And he's also, like you said, they're kind of using him as a, you know, as a third man of the best friends right now. He's probably not going to be wrestling a lot. He's probably just going to be showing up and doing random stuff. I do like how they're using him as, like, the Bray Wyatt or The Undertaker right now, where the lights go out and he appears in the ring just standing there doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a funny way to book him. But, yeah, I think we'll see him for at least the next 4 to 5 months still showing up on the independent scene. If he is, in fact, signing with AEW full-time, I think that's all we get, and then he's gone.
Okay.
That's just me. And going back to Thomas Santel, this is a guy who's going through a career renaissance right now, and I'm super happy to see how popular he has become, because he could potentially be the new Orange Cassidy, someone who's a really, really good professional wrestler, but has such a solid comedy gimmick that it works out just beautifully. Thomas Santel, I remember I was there the first night he came out for the Discovery Gauntlet, and Earth Angel, his theme song from the hit movie Back to the Future, hit, and everyone kind of looked around like, this isn't really a wrestling theme song.
No.
And then this guy comes out looking like, you know, George McFly, and cutting promos about how he's going to have a crisp, cool Ovaltine after the match. And instantly, he was over. I mean, this was it. I've never seen someone get over as quickly as he did. I think he's going to go far, far on the independent scene. And Orange Cassidy versus Thomas Santel might be match of the year. I haven't even seen it, and I'm going to say match of the year.
I'm going to say, like, some of those names I've read out earlier and some of the ones from episode 2, some of them resonated with me. Some I saw them, watched the match, and they were forgettable. Thomas Santel stuck out with me. That gimmick, and it worked perfectly to balance out with Orange Cassidy.
I mean, who would have thought that we would get to see George McFly wrestle? that's all I'm saying. Now, I am a huge Back to the Future fan. Back to the Future is in my top 5 movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a gimmick that plays into that, like, the only thing better would be if you had a Ghostbusters gimmick. Like, there's something so wonderful and magical about that gimmick that I'm hooked. Like, I'm hooked on this guy. You know, I actually did not know that on independent wrestling, you could search by wrestler now. Now that I know that, I'll be searching for Thomas Santel pretty much weekly.
It seems to be hit and miss, though, I have to say. Because there was one when I typed in it, and one of the things that came up, I was like, I know he's definitely not at that event. So, I don't know. It did seem hit and miss. Like I say, I haven't used it that much, but I've only really tried it on Orange Cassidy. But if I do find somebody who gets my interest, it's certainly one I intend using for, to go find their matches.
Good! Bad!
Now, match six, I don't have anything written down for. Now, I'm not quite sure why. I certainly remember the match. Chris Dickinson and Wheeler Yuta. Now, for me, this one resonated because I know Chris Dickinson now. I certainly didn't know who he was, but certainly from the Beyond events that I've seen, he's a hard hitter as well. And actually somebody who I like to watch. And in fact, Mason keeps saying, who's Chris Dickinson? So I guess I've been watching so many matches, I've commented on them now, and he just doesn't know who it is because he hasn't seen them. And Wheeler Yuta, I know from Nova Pro. He was actually the Commonwealth Cup winner in 2018. To me, this was a surprise matchup. If I remember correctly, Wheeler Yuta actually challenged Chris Dickinson. I don't remember the name of the event, but whatever the Beyond event was that was at the beach. I know I watched the first half of that, and yeah, he called him out and said, I'm going to face you on match one. So somebody who I consider a high flyer, I was kind of surprised that he chose Chris Dickinson.
Bit of a on and off rivalry in Beyond, and I think that it's kind of one of those things that will just kind of continue. Like it's long standing, and with how many people have left Beyond, you know, Brighter Pastures or whatever you want to call it, you know, they have to kind of hold on to what they have. They have to hold on to those performers and those feuds that just have resonated with the fans.
Yeah.
And I feel like Wheeler and Dickinson are two of the most tenured Beyond performers at this point. So why not kind of keep rolling with that? Because I know Wheeler had a title shot recently for the IWTV title.
I think he was part of a triple threat, if I remember correctly. I seem to remember something similar as well.
Oh, but he was in the triple threat that Warhorse won, wasn't he?
It was.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. I don't know. I'm a big fan of both guys. Dickinson is interesting to me because he's not your prototypical wrestler. He reminds me... Did you watch WCW in the mid to late 90s?
I did not. If you could get it in England, I certainly didn't have access to it. I started watching in 2000 when I first moved to the States.
Okay. So... WCW had a former UFC fighter on the roster by the name of Tank Abbott. And this is one of the OG UFC. This is like when Ken Shamrock was still a UFC fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is like the original UFC. And I'm not saying they look alike, but they had this very similar style. They were brawlers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tank Abbott was an overly trained professional wrestler. He was a fighter. And I feel that when I see Chris Dickinson, it's like he's a brawler, he's a brute, you know, but he's also a really good wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, but he goes out there, if you remember a number of years ago, I don't know if you were already into the whole internet wrestling community and the indies and all that, but there was a lot of controversy. Dickinson went viral because he literally wrapped a chair around Kimberly's head.
Oh,
I mean, this is one of the most brutal chair shots I have ever seen. And this kickstarted that intergender wrestling is domestic abuse crap.
Mm-hmm.
With Kimberly going, you know, I was in on it, right? Like, I said, hit me with the friggin' chair. And, you know, and then he Zuzu bombed her and she came close to hitting the bottom turnbuckle. And this started this whole friggin'... Chris Dickinson's a dangerous wrestler. He's not trained properly. Chris Dickinson is not a dangerous wrestler. People don't get hurt when they're wrestling Chris Dickinson, but he makes it look like they should.
Yeah.
And that's the important part. It's kind of like Shinsuke Nakamura. Everyone, like in NXT, oh, he hits too hard. No, he makes it look like he's hitting too hard.
Yep.
That's his job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, he's been... neutered and castrated on the main roster. That's his job, though, to make it look like someone's not going to get up. You know, the Kinshasa looks like you just took the tip of his knee to the bridge of your nose, but you didn't because he's good at what he does.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at Chris Dickinson. He makes it look like someone's going to die, but they're not because he knows what he's doing.
Correct. Now, that wasn't the name I thought you were going to say, actually. For me, and I guess partly because of appearance as well, I thought you were going to say Goldberg. That's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with Goldberg. I'm a big Goldberg fan. And WCW booked Goldberg right. Whether you like it or you don't, he was a guy who wasn't really that good, but he could make you think that the reason his matches were 40 seconds long is because that's how powerful he was. Mm-hmm. And that's how they booked him, and it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. That's why I liked his match with Dolph Ziggler at SummerSlam. That's how you book Goldberg. Just crush them. Because in the world, in the facade of professional wrestling, Dolph Ziggler is not going to beat Bill Goldberg. In the magical world of this is real, it's not going to happen. And Goldberg is going to spear him in half and then jackhammer him, and the match is over. And that's how you book him. That's why his match with Brock Lesnar was so panned, because they tried to wrestle.
Yeah.
That's not a Brock Lesnar-Goldberg match.
No.
A Brock Lesnar-Goldberg match is spears and kicking people in the face for 5 to 7 minutes and then ending it.
I agree. And I liked some of those matches that finished literally in 90 seconds for the shock value. It's like, but yeah, there was always the believability that, yeah, he could do that.
But then you go back and watch the infamous Lord Steven Regal versus Goldberg match where Regal, he shot on him and he tried to wrestle him and Goldberg didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it looks, you can tell the awkwardness. And I don't know who's wrong in that situation. I don't necessarily agree with what Regal did, because you knew what you were in the ring with. And you shouldn't have gone out there just to make them look like a schmuck.
Yeah.
That's not your job.
No.
You know, if your job is to go out there and get speared and jackhammered, go out there and get speared and jackhammered. That's it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yep.
So, my soapbox is to the side for now.
Good. Bad.
All right, main event time, and this is definitely one of the names that I got to give you credit for. You mentioned this person, and they were coming to Nova Pro, and I made the great decision of watching some of her matches on IWTV. And I think I can say, I think without any doubt, she's my favorite female wrestler. I'm trying to remember exactly where she was on your list, but I know it was very high. Chris Statlander versus Nick Gage.
I love Chris Statlander. I think Chris Statlander is perfect in every way. I don't know. The gimmick is so outlandish, but it works.
Yeah.
She is stunning. Her in-ring performance is brilliant. There is nothing bad to say about Chris Statlander. But you say Chris Statlander versus Nick Gage, and I go, oh dear God, what did he do to my wonderful, beautiful woman?
All right, let's talk about the match then. Now, actually, I should add a little bit in for this. I actually felt kind of sorry for Chris Statlander when she came to Nova Pro. Her match was in second half. She came out the intermission, and, like, nobody went over there. So I knew who she was. I said to Mason, I was like, that's the first person we're going to talk to. And we got her picture. We got her autograph. Couldn't have been nicer. The autograph stayed with that gimmick as well. It was something like to Human Mason or something. So she was playing the whole alien gimmick up. And it wasn't like, take me to your leader. But there was some comment that was there, and I was like, brilliant, I love that. And then of course they did the finger touch as well, instead of doing like the high five, whatever. So I loved all that. I thought it was great. No, ever since, when she's one of the people, if her match is on, I'm skipping to that match. I will skip other people's matches. I don't miss Chris Statlander's matches. I think the highest praise I can pay to her is, my biggest criticism of her is, I don't like her new theme music as much as I liked her original theme music. I much preferred E.T. over More Than a Woman.
Okay, I can see that. I'm going to be 100% honest. Other than a select few, someone's theme song hits in wrestling, and I usually don't know who the hell's coming out. Even if it's someone I've seen 100 times.
Okay.
I just go, oh, hey, it's this song. Oh, hey, it's this person. Pretty much the ones I remember are Tremont with Separate Ways, because that's such a weird song for someone who's going to end up covered in blood.
Yeah.
And then, God, see, I'm even blanking. Joey Janela's theme song was always stood out. David Starr with Do You Want to Touch Me?
Didn't know that one.
There'll be people I've seen 100 times and their theme song hits, and I'm like, I don't even know who this is.
The reason I know so many now is I have a playlist on my iPod, which is mainly for the boys, and they love listening to predominantly WWE, I'd have to say, entrance themes. And Mason knows them straight away. I didn't know for a long time how he knew them so well. He had his own iPod, and he used to just listen to them all the time. We updated it over the summer to include indie wrestlers, and Jackson can call them now instantly as well. I guess I don't have the brain for it, but if you're sat at an indie event and the music plays, I just look to Mason, and he'll tell me who's coming out. He knows them all perfectly. Orange Cassidy is the one we've probably played the most recently.
I'll put on a YouTube playlist of just like WWF theme songs.
Yeah.
From like the late, like the Attitude Era, so it'll play Kane and DX and stuff, and I'll just let it play on random.
But there's a lot of the indie ones that are actually classic songs, so like I got no problems with that. Like Marco Stunt, fine, perfectly. I have that song on my iPod anyway, so it's kind of easy to do. But yeah, I do prefer. Yeah, that's the only criticism I could offer of Chris Statlander. And obviously, I was worried as well when you know she's facing Nick Gage. You kind of think this could be absolutely brutal. I'm not worried anymore. When you see her in matches like this, and I've seen a couple since, she can definitely hold up. It is definitely believable that she can face those people. Now, the only problem I had with this match was though, and it was a fantastic match. She did lose. And at the end, Nick Gage cut a promo and he basically bigged her up, said how amazing she was, the fact that she could stand all that.
That's basically the thing Nick Gage does.
Yes.
I've noticed a lot of matches. At the end of the matches, he grabs the mic and he goes, "This person right here, they're the FNOG. Like,
yeah.
They're the person you should be watching. Don't look at me. Look at them."
Now,
and I love that about him, that he comes out and he usually closes beyond shows because he's definitely a main event star for them.
Yes.
And he usually ends with, "I effing love you. I'll see you soon." And then just leaves. He's such an articulated, vulgar person.
Now, the problem I have with this, and this is the only problem, and I talked about how I was watching the Chikara Trios at the same time as this. The following day, this is on the Friday, on round night one, I finished the end of this and then went across to that. They actually were on the same tag team. I can't remember the third person. I actually want to say it probably was the Santel, actually, with hindsight. I don't think I realized at the time, but thinking back, I have a problem with that. Now, I'm not sure. If you're on TV like that, should you stay as one character? Now, it's a little different when you're on WWE and you only play one character. Now, you can switch between heel and face characters, but you see the development. Now we have so much wrestling available for us to watch. I'm not sure I like the idea of having different characters in different organizations that you can see readily, as easy as that. Chikara and Beyond are both big organizations. To suddenly go from trying to beat the heck out of each other in a, not a death match, but something close to suddenly being tag team partners in trio at Chikara, I don't know. I have a problem with that.
All right, so I have two things to say about that. One, Chikara doesn't count. Now, hear me out.
Oh!
Chikara, people play different characters than they usually do. I'm going to say Orange Cassidy for one. If you don't know about it, do some digging. I will never, ever spoil this on the internet. But Chikara, they play literal superhero versions of themselves.
Okay.
Like, there's a whole different aspect to their characters when they're in Chikara. Two, so I actually experienced this firsthand. Now, this was before IWTV and all this, but it was something that was very jarring, and it made me kind of go, whoa, this is weird. So right before Dijak left for NXT,
mm-hmm.
I got to see his final match in Beyond, and I got to see his final match in Lucky Pro Wrestling, which is another local organization that he got his start in. So at Beyond, he was over as a face. I mean, people loved him. I loved him. But in Lucky Pro, he was a heel. He was in the Four Horsemen of Lucky Pro Wrestling, which was him, Anthony Green, Mikey Webb, and Scotty Slade. And they were all super heels. So that was his final independent match before going to NXT. But seeing him 1 week as the most over guy in Beyond Wrestling, to the next week him being booed out the building on his farewell, was brilliant but jarring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I wanted to cheer him so bad, but everyone's booing him because it was my first Lucky Pro show, and I was like, oh, he's a heel here?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, I don't know what to do.
Now, I don't mind if it's on the indies. I'm okay with that, because I know that most people don't get to see both of those events. But I have a problem when they're both on television, and you're only separating it by a day. Like, if it would have been 3 weeks later, I could have played it along the angle of, like, oh, he really respected the match that she played, and he wanted her to be part of his team. I can understand that angle, but when this has already been set up, the trios were announced weeks ahead of time.
Yeah. It's and like I said, I feel like Chikara gets a pass because it is its own universe. Like, they literally have their own versions of these characters. Like, Solo Darling isn't always Solo Darling there. Sometimes she's, what, Rumblebee?
I'm not familiar enough with Chikara to comment, but I know that they talked about her on Twitter and that the fact that they love her, that she's there, and that she plays different... slightly different role.
Yeah. So there's slightly different. So I think Chikara gets passed. Now, if this was a Beyond show on Thursday and then a, I don't know, chaotic wrestling show on Friday, or we'll say a CCW show or a GCW show or something, then I would agree, because they're part of the same territory of independent wrestling organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Chikara, like I said, Chikara stands on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So I see what you're saying, but I don't 100% agree with it.
I'm still saying that if this, remember, both of these were on IWTV. Uncharted Territory is Thursday night staple now. Chikara is on Friday, and they've been announcing it for a long time as well. I just have a slight problem at the proximity. I thought it would have been much better if it had been further apart. Or if they hadn't announced that team ahead of time. If it would have been Nick Gage and two other people, I would have been much happier, because it would have been like, oh, I was so impressed with her last night, I want her as part of my team. I thought they could have handled it slightly better, but that's sure. Not that I wasn't happy to see them as a tag team, and they actually faced the team of Jordan Grace, Scott Steiner, and Petey Williams, so that actually turned out to be a really good match anyway. But I thought they could have just handled it a little bit better.
Good! Bad!
Now, as I thought was a possibility, we've run very long on this. We're going to leave this at episode one. We have talked for nearly an hour anyway. That was the last match. Ryan, I want to thank you so much. I knew that you would be the perfect person to talk to about Uncharted Territory. I knew you'd be able to throw in that insight that I love to hear. Anything else you want to talk about on Uncharted Territory that we didn't get a chance to talk about during those seven matches from episode one?
No. I mean, I think what Beyond is doing is something so wonderful for professional wrestling, and I feel utterly ashamed that I have not been able to be a part of it for quite some time. But, you know, I mean, if they keep doing what they're doing, I can see Beyond rising up to the levels of the mega indie promotions such as Evolve or PWG, or, you know, I can see them firmly cementing their place in the annals of professional wrestling history. So
yeah,
I'm happy with what they're doing. Absolutely.
Perfect. All right. One more time. Can you make sure you tell us how to find you on Twitter? Twitch, is that the right thing? But tell us how to find you on social media and all the different locations that all your aliases have, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. So follow me on Twitter for when I'm there, at the Blade Job Show. As I kind of stated earlier, I'm taking a little bit of a hiatus just because of things. But I'm still there. I'm still lurking. I'm still seeing it. And then I do streaming of the gaming variety over on mixer.com/nicheguy, where I kind of do whatever suits my fancy that day. Those are the two primary places you can find me at this time.
All right. Well, as I was kind of bad cop today, I know this is going to annoy my normal co-host. That was Ryan. I'm Graham. We're out of here.
The music was Happy Happy Game Show by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http:// creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/.